2000 AD Thrillcast Supplemental, Number 2, Emma Beebe. Borag-thong, Earthlits, and welcome to another 2000 AD Throwcast supplemental episode where we're going to be continuing our chat with writer Emma Beebe about her work for the galaxy's greatest comic and beyond. I'm not going to give a major intro to this one, so we'll just go straight in. Emma, welcome back to the 2000 AD Throwcast.
Hello, nice to be back.
Now, you know, we talk about representation and there's an ongoing debate within comics at the moment about its portrayal of women and minorities LGBT characters. Judge Dredd, especially out of 2000 AD, has a lot of very prominent, very interesting female characters. You've got Chief Judge Hershey, you've got Amy Nixon, Galen DeMarco. So With Anderson, what makes her stand out from the rest? What's so striking about Judge Anderson that she's just such a fundamental part of Judge Dredd's world?
Well, partly I think that she's been there for a long time. Mm. She's very well established, so she's got this shared history with Dredd as part of that world, on a longer basis than the others you mentioned. But also, I think she serves as almost a reflection of Dredd, in that he is that world. You know, taking him out of that world would be even funnier. I mean, how does that work? How would he adapt to being anywhere apart from that world? He's such a reflection of that world. Mm. Whereas Anderson, I think she's a lot more relatable. She is a lot more straight up human, rather than almost caricatured. So she has that important function as well in looking at that world and talking about the awful things that happen, mm. and the horrible aspects of that kind of society and how they affect an individual while still being part of that system.
Yeah.
So she's maybe a lot more upfront about how that affects her personally. And you know, although that's not in every story, you know it's in her head, and you know she's gone through a lot, and I think that gives her a particular strength and depth, as well as she's been to a lot of different places in that world, and so she's kind of thrown that reflection on many places as well. So mm. She's got an awful lot going for her, and as you know, as I say, I think it's pretty amazing that she's survived this long, continued to age, and continued to get her own strip. and as much as there's, you know, young Anderson, Cadet Anderson, and all this stuff, you know, for me, I want to write the one that's had all of the experience. I want to write the one who's been through various forms of hell,
mm.
and is still working, and is, you know, facing down the world as she ever has. So those things to me make her really stand out. You know, I think I was thinking how, you know, if you had that character from Fresh, if she'd never appeared before,
mm.
it would be very difficult to sell her anywhere, to get her a place, because and I think it is a part of a representational issue, because I think most publications would come back and say, yeah, but could she not be 20?
<Yeah,
laughs> could
yeah.
she not be kind of, you know, young and hot and someone's psychic and something like that. So getting away from the simple female version of a male character and plenty of objectification stuck in there too is hard. You know, there's not much of that.
Do you think there's a bit of a kind of problematic, because I've read some criticism of Judge Anderson and the dynamic where, in order for a character to show any kind of emotion, to be softer, to be more human, to be empathetic, she has to be a woman. Do you think there's a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have any hard and fast views on what a female character should be and what a male character should be. I think above all, it has to be a believable character.
Yeah.
And it has to be a relatable character, even if, you know, someone like Dredd, he might be slightly hard to relate to, but he is believable. Because he's part of that particular world, that's the way you come to him to relate to him. It's very tied up in that particular world. I think for Anderson, yeah, maybe she came out of a desire to do something that wasn't quite so down the line of tough cop type thing. But she also is a tough cop. You know, she has both. And I think, you know, she's not a mopey individual wandering around bemoaning the state of the world and not doing anything about it. She's very active. She's very in charge, and she's extremely competent. I guess my problem is with characters who don't have any kind of roundness to them or any real reality to them. So, you know, those female characters who are just, you know, very sexualized versions of very shallow male characters, it kind of makes it worse. It's like, it was already not that exciting, and then you just, you know, throw lots of pointless ass shots in it too. So it's just, I can't be bothered with that. And it's not something I'd really want to get into. So, you know, these things exist, but for me, they don't add anything. So having both male and female and, you know, your whole suite of persons of colour and transgender characters and all of these things, which don't get as much of a real representation, and you know, there's a huge richness there, and I think it's not about just making sure that you tick the box and you have, you know, something there that covers all of these off. It's about ensuring that the world you're creating is rich and has different kinds of narratives, and it has different kinds of stories, and that adds to the story. It doesn't detract from it in any way. I don't see that as threatening. I see it as exciting. So for me, those are the things that I'd want to bring in if I was doing new characters, just thinking about how to make them interesting and stand out and relatable and human. So, you know, with the Cadet Flowers, you know, I really wanted to take a character who all he really wanted to be was this tough, dread-like character. And, you know, I think that's where he probably started out in life, as a young, tough black man, and he started his superiority among his classmates and then discovered that it was because he had psychic ability. And he lost a lot of respect and was made fun of and got transferred to psy training and surrounded by, you know, women, because there's an awful lot of women in psy. So he, you know, he now has to completely reestablish his identity in a new framework, and slightly resenting it as well. So those things, you know, those are the things that make a character, for me, a bit more interesting, that They're not just a simple cop hunt down bad guys. It's all those other things. And you can bring in lots of different aspects to that. You can pull from anywhere, I guess, is the point. From their sexuality, their gender, their race, their background, whatever it is that makes the character interesting and relatable, and shouldn't be shy of pulling on wherever works. Even though it's unfamiliar.
I was going to ask about Cy Judge Flowers, because obviously there's a difficult dynamic for him in respect of Judge Anderson being his superior and him wanting to prove himself and be strong, whereas she has this kind of quiet, how to describe it, kind of dignity of experience that you know, she's been through all of these terrible things, has been to you know, death's door and back, and that gives her a kind of mature serenity, I think.
Exactly, and I think his first instinct is to, you know, to hit first, really. And I think if he, because he can sense if someone has violent intentions, so he's kind of in this position where he can, you know, he could just take someone down before they've done anything, frankly. And so he's a reactionary type. He doesn't really plan too much, whereas Anderson is much more of a planner. Her psi abilities are part of her toolbox. They're not the only tool in the box. So she has a lot of experience to draw on as well. Whereas for him, he's much more of an instinctual psi. He can barely stop himself. So he needs that experience, and he needs someone with that experience to help him temper his ways. And he gets in trouble because he reacts without planning, and, you know, he does stupid things as a result, and he doesn't mean to, but that's unfortunately where he needs to learn. So it was, you know, it was quite deliberate from my perspective to put them together, because those are their opposing tweets. So that was what I wanted to do.
Sure. Now, we've concentrated a lot on your work on Judge Dredd and Judge Anderson, because there's another strip that you write with Gordon Rennie for 2000 AD, which is a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more capery, and that's Survival Geeks, which has just recently had its second series in 2000 AD and is coming back in the summer special in June. For those who haven't read any Survival Geeks, tell us a little bit about the core concept.
It's about a group of three young, very geeky men who share a house, and a girl called Sam has a one-night stand with one of them and ends up being somewhat stuck in the house when they activate their interdimensional travel. So the house basically moves to another dimension but stays in the same geographical location. So it kind of it appears in all of these different worlds. And the theory is that where the walls between these worlds are thinnest is where there's usually an apocalypse going on. So they've had kind of, you know, there's three of them. There's Clive, who's the very sciencey one who's come up with this strange interdimensional travel. I mean, they're all sort of geeky film obsessed, particularly with Star Wars. And there's Simon, who's kind of the, you know, the one who can negotiate best in the normal world. his various comics and films obsessions. And then there's this obligatory sort of kind of stoner games obsessed. And Rufus as well. So yeah, it's the four of them basically facing down various slightly ridiculous apocalypse, and assuming that their training from watching, you know, genre movies and reading comics will be sufficient to keep them alive. So at the point we've left them there, they've just left a kind of Cthulhu invaded world. It was ridiculously fun to write that. and they've now got a little like Cthulhu head pet.
Right.
So we'll see some of that in the summer special.
Yeah, the baby Cthulhus have been very popular, if the reaction online has been anything to go by.
Yeah, I remember, we were plotting this episode just about a year ago, and I was trying to say, no, baby Cthulhus, don't people love them? And Gordon was just like, baby Cthulhu. So anyway,
what does Gordon know?
Yeah, what does he know? I know. So I thought cute Cthulhus would be absolutely... absolutely brilliant.
I mean, I think it helps that you've got Neil Googe doing the artwork, so he's got that slightly kind of manga influenced work, which really kind of makes things like that pop.
Yeah,
you know?
He's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, everything he sends back to us has got, you know, so many wonderful little details. In it, you know, he'll really, really run with things that you give him. You don't have to give him a lot, but he's clearly enjoying himself, you know, and he relating in some way, I assume. So he throws in lots of really funny little moments into these, which we can take no credit for. It's all Neil. So yeah, he was a total gift on this. You know, I think the first time I noticed this was we had the introduction of Simon's bedroom, and it's absolutely just strewn with geekery and geeky posters and action figures and a Star Wars bedspread and all this stuff. I mean, that was literally the description that we gave Neil, and what he came up with was mind-blowing. It was just amazing. There were so many little funny things in it and little 2000 AD things that were really funny too, and it was, I mean, tiny, tiny details. You could spend hours looking at that that one panel, and just amazing. And the giant Cthulhu, and he drew that, I mean, he spent so long on it, but it was worth it. It was a beauty to behold, you know. So he really brings so much to that strip. It's a pleasure.
One of the things you do with Survival Geeks is you're playing a lot with cliches. You're messing around with the old tropes that we know and love and sometimes love. And the most recent series took a proper big broadside at steampunk as a genre. How do you play with cliche without falling into it?
Well, I think if you can see the funny side of them, it really, you know, you really have to start there. And I think, you know, as much as I love a good steampunk costume as much as the next person, I do, you know, you do encounter, it takes itself quite seriously at times. So we really wanted to show something that was taking itself really seriously and was just ridiculous. Mm. And there's this huge threat. But everyone's just, you know, acting like and it's all fine. It was more coming from there, and you know, we had quite a lot of fun with costumes and things in that one. It was very entertaining.
It's a very interesting contrast between your work on Judge Dredd and something like Survival Geeks. They're at opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, one's dealing with a lot of weighty issues, and the other one is just absolute, you know, over the top fun.
Yes, just having fun. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what keeps you sane. So it's very easy to just write dark and depressing stories. But it, I think when you get the opportunity to do something fun, and I love writing comedy stories, I really, really love it, then, you know, I think I was out working on the first issue of that, and I think I wrote the line, Cthulhu's thousands of them, and I couldn't stop laughing. So I was sitting there in the cafe laughing at my own joke. I'm thinking, well, you know, it's a lot more fun than writing Dread. I never laugh out loud at that. So people are staring, but, you know, I don't care. And so, yeah, you can have a lot more fun. It's, you know, it's, writing comedy stuff is hard. If you don't find it funny, if you don't think it's entertaining, it's probably not working. You can't overthink and be too clever, because probably then it's not going to work on the page. So it's got its own set of stressful challenges. It's not all sitting in cafes and laughing to yourself, sadly. But it's hard, but it's a very different type of challenge. I think it's great. I'm really lucky in that I get to write these different types of stories in different types of worlds, and I think that's one of the great things about working in 2000 AD is there are these opportunities to do different range of stories.
And as we mentioned, you've got a story coming up in the summer special, which is out on June 24th. Without giving too much away, what sort of things can we expect from that?
It's quite different in that we wanted to kind of do a slightly smaller story. That basically, in this story, they don't leave the house, so they're not to make it sound dull, but they, obviously the dynamics between the characters, and we discover that one of the ways that they've been entertaining themselves on their trips is to try and use whatever ridiculous apocalyptic environment they're in order to put together a movie. So it's like they've got special effects on cue with various monsters, and they're trying to do film scenes and homages to, you know, Indiana Jones and stuff while they're being chased by Pac-Man monsters. So things like that. So you kind of, it's them watching this film, only there's something else in the film. So it's you know, it's a much sort of smaller but sillier kind of little story. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and mostly we wanted to have Howard the House Pet. So anything with Baby Cthulhu in it, I think it's just ridiculously fun. So yeah, it was a deliberate attempt to do something a bit smaller than we get out of the house and they meet something which, once again, isn't zombies. I just wanted to do something a bit silly, but different.
You've talked about writing on your own, and also writing with Gordon. Obviously, writing with a co-writer is going to be different. But what do you each bring to the co-written scripts? What's the BB style, and what's the Rennie style?
The Rennie style is being really grumpy, and I could go on. I'll try not. We actually do have very different approaches to our writing. I am an obsessive planner.
Right.
I like to plot. I like to know everything that's happening in advance. I like to do page by page breakdowns. I will happily abandon those if they don't work on the page. You know, Dredd says he doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
That's fine. But I'd like to at least have a path that I'm starting on. Whereas Gordon sits down and writes page one, panel one, and has no idea what's going to happen. So until he starts. And, you know, I think that because there's a great confidence as a writer. But we have very different approaches. So obviously trying to plan stories together in that It was a bit of a challenge. So mostly what we do is we agree, you know, usually we divide up the episodes and we each write that particular episode and swap and edit each other. And we agree in advance the things that absolutely need to happen in that episode. And then, you know, I'll go and plan in great detail and he'll sit and write page one, panel one, note for this. So, it works, surprisingly, it works. I have no idea how, but it does. So, that's how we tend to do it.
Okay. There's one of the things I wanted to ask about was the fact that, you know, we've already touched on this, that there's not a huge turnover of writers at 2000 AD. You know, there are many artists that have drawn for us over the years, but in comparison, not as many writers. And as one of the newer writers for 2000 AD. What do you think a bit of new blood brings to things? You know, do you think it's important that we regularly find new voices to bring into the comic?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly benefited me. I'm sure it's benefited a few guys maybe as well. I think it's obviously important. I think particularly for your anthology types with lots of different worlds and different stories and different time periods and different genres, you know, the ability for you to have someone come in and bring something new to it is limitless. So all of those things should be embraced. At the same time, for your fans, I think they'd be very upset if there weren't, you know, regular John Wagner stories. So you need to have, I think you need to have that kind of balance that people keep coming back for, because, you know, it's built in. They know there's going to be the great stories from the people they love and have been following for, you know, decades maybe. but because of the format, there's things that will be new and stories that will be new and writers and artists who will be new, and there's not that kind of house style in the way of American comics where all the art kind of looks the same, and you know, you have that ability to spread out a little and make your mark. And there's, you know, a nice light touch editorial hand, and there's, you know, a big fan base to send it out into. So all of those things are really nice for a new writer, and I think are very beneficial for readers, because it can be something of an experimentation ground. But I mean, there's that huge history in 2000 AD where really big names have come out of there and started out doing, you know, the Future Shocks and gone on to doing amazing things. So I think having that is healthy and definitely provides a really great training ground for writers as well.
As somebody who's come in and hasn't been through that Future Shock experience,
I know, it's sad of me.
but from your comments on the whole Doctor Who audio thing, I think that's an apprenticeship in of itself is being restricted, and the horoscopes, of course, you know.
Of course.
Gordon, a little while ago, and we're going to be talking to him about this on the next Rillcast. Did a riff on
don't tell him what I said.
I think he might be able to find out. He riffed off the old 2000 AD character Black Hawk to create Aquila, which is his swords and sorcery.
I love Aquila.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and you know, we're going to be talking to him about that in depth next time. Is there, as a relative newcomer to 2000 AD, is there a character that that you've looked at and thought, actually, I'd like a stab at that? Now that I've done Dredd and Judge Anderson, this is a character I'd like to have a go at now.
My goodness. Wow. Actually, I have no idea.
No, it's a bit of a big question, I'll
like,
admit.
But yeah, it is. I'm going to have to go think of something now. I'll email you later. I have no idea. For me, I mean, it's still... I don't know how it feels to other people, but for me, it still feels quite early. And I still feel like I'm getting to grips with and being privileged with writing your, Dredd and Anderson. And I mean, even doing Anderson at all was... such a massive thing to be allowed to. I don't want to push my luck further. What do you like? I think probably what I'd want to do next, other than maybe some more Anderson, some more geeks, and obviously the alien, if she haven't mentioned, is perhaps to do, my own, original series. I think that would probably be. What I would want to do next is to do something a bit unique.
Yeah.
And then go and redo Shackle or something. So
he is the only bear on the CIA death list. It has to. It must be admitted.
He is. So it's all possible.
Right.
But no, it's not something I've given any thought to yet, but now you've mentioned it, maybe I shall.
And there was the strip that you've written with Gordon Rennie that was in the 2080 Winter Special, The Alienist. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we were looking for a home for this character. We kind of wanted to do a history piece and something a little bit almost sci-fi, we're all a bit interdimensional stuff, aren't we?
Yeah.
So this is another character from another dimension. And rather than be dealing with aliens, she's basically dealing with things that are coming through to basically Edwardian Britain from other dimensions, and they're wreaking all kinds of havoc. And obviously being a woman at that time, she's not massively taken seriously. So she has basically hired an actor to pretend to be the one in charge, and an old man who kind of turns up and announces that they're going to take care of everything, but in fact she's kind of behind it all. So that's kind of where we left her at in the Winter Special. She was hiring an actor to work with her after she had such trouble the first time around. So she's kind of stuck in this form, and there's not much you can do. She's also sacrificed quite a lot. She has sort of psychic abilities, but she's kind of lost them through her encounter in the Winter Special.
Yeah.
So she's significantly drained of her abilities. So perhaps before she could have quite easily or more easily manipulated those around her to accepting her. But now she needs more help. So the story we're doing is a series, and it's basically a haunted house story.
Right.
So but obviously all is not good to hear to me. So it's it's fun because kind of crossing that horror sci-fi threshold, which I particularly like. So something different again.
Yeah, it did have that very kind of old school, particularly with the art from Ian Coveney. Just of it evoked comics like the Old Eagle and Scream and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. No, his art's been great. he's been great on it. It's funny, I've ended up working with him a few times, sort of by accident. We on the Dread summer special that I did, I saw him on Facebook or something saying, "Oh, great, I'm doing a Dread story." But I bet the dude's mine. I bet it's mine. So we kind of seem to end up working together. I think. Right. But it's nice because he's new as well, and you know, so for me, it's quite good having another relative newbie rather than, you know, veteran that I deal with most of the time. So so that's been really nice. Okay. Working with him.
So 2000 AD aside, which we've talked about an awful lot, you've also got a fairly major project coming up with Dynamite and a whole clutch of other writers. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm doing this thing with Gail Simone and a whole bunch of female writers for Dynamite Comics, which is very exciting, and it's a huge crossover event with all female characters, and it's, you know, Deja Thoris and Vampirella and Red Sonja, and so all of these characters from quite different universes almost crossing over for the first time and being thrown together in a versus situation. So, it's all female writers writing all female characters in this very pulp kind of way. And I'm doing Jane Porter, Tarzan's wife, versus Panther, who's from the Vampirella universe. He's basically a kind of ancient Egyptian goddess or daughter of one, and she can transform into the panther. So I'm doing this very early version of her straight out of Egypt, and putting them in the Edwardian London, and the Great Pyramid appears, and trouble ensues, and demons and things. So it's great fun.
Right.
I had a lot of fun on that, and really got to kind of reinvent these characters.
Right.
You know, from the inside out. You know, Jane's never had her own, her own solo title. She's always been with Tarzan.
Yeah.
So that was fun to think, you know, what will I do with you? And Panther's probably best known in her kind of fallen thigh-high boots look of latter years, but I kind of wanted to get back to a slightly more raw version of her when she was really scary and just, you know, turned into giant cat and intimidated people of the violence. So I thought that would be quite fun. So yeah, that was my approach to them. And the series is starting in May, and my one comes out in August, I think. So it goes on for quite a while, but definitely worth checking out. People probably know of Leah Moore. She's obviously another 2000 AD
sure
person. She's doing Irene Adler. It's also going to be worth checking out. So there's lots of really fun combinations to be seen.
Okay. Now you're used to working with Gordon quite closely, but for a big crossover event with lots of different characters from lots of different universes, how easy / difficult was that to kind of steer around all the rocks of what other people were doing?
Yeah, it's hugely ambitious, and obviously we're all in different countries and time zones, and so from that point of view, it's pretty hard to keep up with things. You know, an email come in at 3 a.m. and I miss it and things. So, keeping on top of these things presents particular challenges. But it's actually worked surprisingly well. And Gail's done this overarching story, and everyone's doing kind of branches off that story, and she's doing the kind of spine of it. So it seems to be, it's been very well thought out as to how it's going to work, and we have a lot of freedom within what we have to do. As long as it, achieves X, Y, and Z, it's, going to work. So it's taken quite a long time. I mean, she first approached me about it back in June. So it's taken kind of, quite a long time for all of this to come together and get started. But I think the planning, had to be right for it to work in practice. And I mean, one of the lovely things about it is being sent all the scripts and all the artwork from other people's things. Amazing. It's so exciting. It's like, Gail Simone be mailing me her scripts. Awesome. I regularly get sent all of these scripts and artwork, and it's such a treat for me to see, other people's comic scripts and particularly other female writers and American writers. it's just, wow, it's been a total treat. Mm. So that's been a lot of fun, and it shows what's possible, that these things can work. I've not always been a big fan of crossover things. I think, you have to know so much. Mm. but one of the really nice things about this story is it doesn't really require you to bring, a comprehensive knowledge of John Carter and Tarzan and, Sherlock Holmes and all these universes that are clashing. It's good storytelling, good fun, and those are the priorities. So that was pretty much the mission objective, was to make it really accessible. And I think it's absolutely succeeding. It's great fun for me to get these things in and meet them. It's brilliant fun. I don't want it to end.
Gail's a huge personality on social media and within comics, and we've talked a little bit in these episodes about representation and things like that. This is a huge statement on her part and on Dynamite's part as well about the kind of audience and comics that they want to reach. It must be. I'm not even going to ask a question. I'm just going to make a statement. You sound very excited about being a part of that.
Definitely. She said from the outset, imagine if all of those pulp books had been written for women, as well as, its standard audience, imagine that and put those female characters in that situation where it's got that appeal. And that was very exciting. So yeah. it's a hell of a brief to be given to take things that are long established and well loved and take them into a slightly new direction. Dynamite has been very open to the changes that she and the rest of us have suggested and wanted to do to achieve that. I think it's got a huge potential. I think it's going to do astonishingly well. It was very striking to write it because I had two female leads and a female villain and hardly any men. And it felt really strange. I was kind of, getting to page 16 thinking, gosh, no men speaking for a while. pages and pages of no men speaking.
Oh, the irony.
But the thing is, it's so normal the other way around that you don't even think about it. When you actually do it, you don't have women speaking. Yeah. It's suddenly like, whoa, this is weird. But it's great. It was amazing. So I think if something like that can be successful, where it's really gone to the other side of it, I think it's got a massive potential to maybe redress some of that balance, or so that these female dominated stories can totally work just as well as the male ones. Yeah. Why not have the absolute breadth? There's nothing wrong with male dominated stories, but why not have some balance on some female ones, and everything in between. Yeah. So I think that's been hugely eye-opening for me that in all the things I've written, I've never had page after page after page of just women talking, and it's great. And then they're fighting and they're doing all these things that, you know, it's not different in any way. It's not, you know, it works. So, so that was great for me.
Okay. Well, again, we've run out of time for this week. I want to say a huge thank you to Emma Beebe for her time and talking to us in such depth about her work. Thanks so much, Emma, for joining us on the Thrillcast for a second time.
Thank you. Yeah, it was great.
Good. Excellent. Marvellous. And once again, a huge thank you to Emma for joining us for a bit of a mammoth chat for the Thrillcast. I hope you've enjoyed the supplementals so far, Earthlit. Please do let us know what you think. Send all your feedback to thrillcast@2000adonline.com or tweet us at 2000ad on Twitter. Next week, we'll be back to our usual schedule, and we will be talking to Gordon Rennie about his series Aquila, which is currently being serialised in US format comics by 2000AD, available worldwide, and also hopefully a couple of other extra special guests who will be talking about what's coming up in 2000AD in the coming weeks. If there's a creator that you'd like us to focus on with a forthcoming supplemental, or even a character or story that you think is deserving of some in-depth analysis, please do let us know at thrillcast@2000adonline.com or tweet us at 2000AD on Twitter. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2000AD is in orbit every Wednesday from all good newsagents and comic book stores. 2000AD is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2000adonline.com, or you can download the free 2000AD app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000 space AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2000AD classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more, are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. In the meantime, all hail Tharg the Mighty and Splundig Verthrig, Earthlits.